Hello, this is John Leo, editor of MindingTheCampus.com. Today I have with me Peter Berkowitz, a fellow at the Hoover Institution, who has just finished appearing at our symposium on Alan Bloom here in New York. Peter, you did say at one point on one of the panels that today's university gives each student a little of this, a little of that, but not much of anything.
That's right. What I was referring to is the kinds of core curriculum that you generally find at our universities today. To ask students to take a few classes in the humanities, a few classes in the social sciences, and a few classes in the sciences. But students are asked to choose from a huge selection of courses. There's really next to no instruction or direction given from the university. So it is like going to a grand market or a bazaar in which you can choose whatever suits your fancy. And moreover, what is offered because it suits the fancy of the professors. Very little of what is put before the students is put forward to them to help them construct a coherent four-year education.
And part of the problem, I assume, is that students are asked to make decisions on courses before they really know enough about what's available and what will suit them.
Well, I think that's part of the problem. But another part of the problem, though, is the message that the curriculum emphatically sends. And the message that the curriculum sends is there is no particular content to education, that the university doesn't really know what it is to be an educated person. That's the message conveyed by the curriculum. Mm-hmm.
And another part of the problem, which you referred to in a recent Wall Street Journal op-ed piece, is that there are very abstract courses available, like the art of interpretation, whatever that might mean. Why are they offering courses like that?
Well, of course, they're offering courses like that because professors want to teach courses like that, because courses like that enable professors to use the courses to advance their own research program. In this respect, not necessarily to indoctrinate students, but so the professors can be reading articles and developing ideas that they will then be able to put down in paper for articles. What we need more of is a curriculum that answers to the question, what makes sense for a student, someone who is beginning or at an intermediate level in inquiry, what should he or she be studying? And the truth of the matter is that the answer is very simple, right? You need to start with the basics. As we discussed in the conference, it's true that the problem goes down through our high schools to our grade schools. We're not teaching our children the basics of history and literature and great ideas. That's all true. Colleges ought not avoid the fact that they must engage in a kind of remedial education if students are, in a useful manner, to deal with abstract theoretical inquiries.
At the meeting today, you had an intriguing idea of offering bonuses or $10,000 or $15,000 extra, which had all the professors' full attention. What would you give them for, and in what areas?
Which sorts of courses? Mm-hmm. Basic courses. Courses that, in my judgment, are really essential if students are to make a progress in liberal learning, are to be able to think for themselves, are to be able to question convictions and inherited assumptions, most of which most professors would agree are good things. But I think in order to be able to raise critical questions and provide plausible answers, I think students ought to know classical history, Greek and Roman history. I think they ought to know modern European history. I think they should know some American history. I think they should be introduced to the best of American literature and English literature. I think they should know the principles of American government. They should know something about the history of political philosophy, the principles of economics. They should know something about religion. They should take one comparative course at least, comparing Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. What could be more important these days? Students should also take classes in the sciences, biology and physics, and all students, it seems to me, should be required to show fluency in a foreign language, at least that level of fluency that would allow them to carry on a casual conversation and read a newspaper. And I'd like to emphasize this last point. There's a lot of talk about multiculturalism at the university, as we all know. There's a lot of talk about studying the other. the best way to learn about a civilization, a people foreign to you, is to learn their language. But what many leading universities now require, 1 year of language study, is a farce. It is a denigration, actually, of language study. Students are smart. They understand the message that's sent to them when the university asks them to study a language for a year. The lesson they learn is language study is really unserious. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We had to fulfill this requirement. I think it's actually very important. Knowing about other civilizations is very important, and that's why I emphasize also foreign language study.
That sounds good, but get back to the bonuses for a minute. Why do we have to come across with $10,000 or $15,000 extra for what would appear to be the teacher's job anyway?
It's because as the university has developed over the last 20 years, it has put in place a set of incentives which encourage professors to put their scholarly interests first. Okay? The university has done that. Professors are part of the university. They've helped establish such incentives. And it seems to me if you're going to reform the university, you have to be realistic. You have to reform the incentive structure. $10,000 or $15,000, I believe, is a reasonable amount of money. I think it would attract professors' attention. And I think it would draw men and women who would teach the kinds of survey classes that I've mentioned in history, but also the kinds of what, for want of a better term, I'll call great books classes in literature, in philosophy.
Is it possible to make your way up the academic ladder today without emphasizing research over teaching?
Generally, and for the most part, no. It's simply impossible. Even at our best small liberal arts colleges, a premium is placed on research. That's not altogether a bad thing, taking research seriously, but I would be in favor, again, slowly, incrementally, introducing changes in the incentive structure so as to place a bit more emphasis on an education that has at its heart students' interests.
What did you take away from that conference as perhaps the most important point or two of what was said?
Well, that's the toughest question you've asked because there were a remarkable number of fine observations at the conference today. So I'll mention one. What I was reminded from the conversation about Bloom, the day-long conversation about Bloom, is that liberal education in a democratic society actually serves a variety of ends. Liberal education is, in part, civic education. It's education for citizenship, and that's makes sense. We subsidize our universities through tax exemptions at the federal and state level. It's a luxury. Society has an interest in what becomes of students. So there's the civic dimension. There is the critical dimension. We want a liberal education to enable students to think critically, to question, as I mentioned before, inherited assumptions, to transcend the merely given. So refine the critical intellect. But third, I think it was Heather McDonald at the conference who emphasized this, a liberal education is also education in things beautiful, something Alan Bloom says as well. I think liberal education should serve all three ends. I recognize that there are tensions among these different ends. However, we will be much better off when more and more of our professors and more of our administrators recognize all three of these ends and understand that the debate about education should be how to balance and combine them.
Another point made at the conference was that if students don't have some sort of rough core to their curriculum, they'll have nothing to discuss among themselves. They can't agree, disagree, argue, or have a bull session if everybody's taking something different. Do you put any weight on that?
I put a huge amount of weight on that. We know from Mark Stein's marvelous talk that they'll have music to talk about, popular music to talk about. But of course, that's right. In order for there to be a debate, in order for there to be a lively debate, a satisfying debate, a debate in which the debaters take opposite positions and can really go at it, they need some kind of common foundation. They need not only a shared civility in order for them to intellectually go at it, but they need to know some history. They need to have some references and allusions in common. So I think actually the lack of a common foundation cripples students, intellectually cripples them, and deprives them of one of the experiences that many of us most cherish from college, which is what happens outside of the classroom. When you have this common foundation, you can talk about morals, you can talk about politics, you can talk about any subject under the sun, and you can air your disagreements because you share a language.
Very good. This is John Leo with Peter Berkowitz of the Hoover Institution. Thank you very much, Peter.
Thank you.